Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and welcome to Valley Edition. On our program today, Fresno City and County are looking to build a better animal control service. Will all the different animal groups and public officials be able to come up with a plan? And we will hear how Madera makes its animal control center work with limited funds. Plus, how to attract Fresno's best and brightest back to the place they once called home. But first, after weeks of tension-filled criticism and back and forth, the Central California Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals terminated its contract with the city and county of Fresno, basically getting out of the animal control business. The SPCA had come under attack by various pet rescue organizations, animal lovers who believe the SPCA wasn't doing enough to make sure animals got adopted. Here to discuss the issue and is Fresno City Councilman Clint Olivier and Becky Holly with Fresno Bully Rescue. Thank you both for joining me today.
It's my pleasure.
Appreciate you coming in. First of all, Councilmember Olivier, what kind of position does this put the city in with the SPCA just pulling out like that?
Well, I guess it would be – it wouldn't be or I think it would be a good characterization to say that the city is now in the lurch. This wasn't the intention at all. I think when the first questions were raised about some of the things that the SPCA was doing, I spoke out for transparency and accountability. It wasn't my intention, nor do I believe it was the intention of anybody within the city to see this agreement severed. I mean, we're talking about a decades-long agreement between the city and the SPCA to provide animal control and run a shelter. So when that was announced on a radio program without meetings with the city management, no meetings with the mayor, no meetings at all, there was no attempt to find common ground. Now we find ourselves in a position where we have to find a new dog catcher for all intents and purposes. So, we've got 6 months to do it. I'm, of course, completely confident that we'll be able to, and I'm hopeful it's going to be along the lines of a better model than the current one.
Well, much was said about the SPCA feeling like they were kind of coming under attack. You were critical of them. What were your concerns?
I never took a position on the care of the animals. I never took a position on the conditions in the shelter. I never took a position on the euthanasia rates, because I don't believe that's where I should be as an elected. That's just me personally. My colleagues may have different feelings on those issues. But as someone, I'm not a professional. I don't purport to know how to run an animal shelter, how to rescue animals. I came forward and I said, there's enough here where our taxpayers deserve to have a voice in this process. And by that, I mean the SPCA's meetings are closed to the public. There are some important discussions where taxpayers cannot participate. I have constituents who've been attacked by dogs who don't have a voice and have received poor service from the SPCA, who don't have a voice. There's no complaint process. There was no way for the public to be involved in this. And the counter argument has been brought up. Okay, the SPCA is like any other contractor with the city. You hire a guy to pave the street. Well, Clint, why don't you insist on putting a board member on the street paving company or the light pole changing company? There's a difference, a major difference, that the SPCA is a critical ongoing partner in providing taxpayers with health and safety service. I mean, you're talking about a pseudo law enforcement agency that's out there seizing private property, destroying private property, issuing citations, acting as a pseudo law enforcement group. And because of this, that makes them – it's apples and oranges. They're not a street paving company. They're not a tree trimming company. These guys are our most – our closest partner. So I spoke out for transparency. I spoke out for open meetings. I thought, well, maybe we can give taxpayers a better voice by putting a county supervisor and a city council member on the board.
Okay.
And then this happens.
Now, Ms. Holly, first of all, tell me just a little bit about your rescue organization.
Okay. Fresno Bully Rescue is a nonprofit, no-kill shelter here in Fresno. We house about 40 dogs at any given time. Since we are no-kill, they stay with us until they are adopted. And we work with different rescue organizations and animal control agencies up and down the state of California to be able to save as many dogs as we can.
So it seemed the tension between the SPCA and groups like yours really escalated over the last few weeks. What specifically were the concerns?
This whole thing really started and got out into the public when the SPCA, issued a non-negotiable contract to rescues in the area regarding our ability to pull animals from their shelter and bring them into our organization. We work with, like I said, different agencies up and down the state of California, one being Kern County, who does have written policies, and we agreed with that, and we, in fact, welcomed them and wanted them. But, in fact, this contract was completely invasive, asking for oversight into not only our facilities, our records, asking us to provide personal and confidential information of people who adopt from us. Those are things in the contract that we could absolutely not agree with and we thought were completely unnecessary, especially when the SPCA had no oversight at all.
Well, if you look at it from the other side, them asking for a contract, that doesn't seem to be something that's so unreasonable to give them a little bit of – to know who the different rescue organizations are that are wanting to take dogs for adoption. It doesn't seem to be an unreasonable thing to ask.
No, and it absolutely wasn't. In fact, we have contracts with other agencies as well. And like I said, written contracts were welcomed. However, this one was non-negotiable, and I said there were items in the contract that we just, as our own personal nonprofit organization, could not sign that contract under those provisions. We actually, as a rescue community, came together and provided the SPCA with a responsive memorandum of understanding. And we asked them to please negotiate with us. Let's sit down, even through the county. Henry Perea tried to possibly mediate this issue and negotiate the contract, and there was absolutely no response whatsoever.
Is there, again, from the other side, you might have, that is kind of tough to do business with people where everybody's sort of piling it on at the same time. Do you feel like that may have been part of it, Clint, that it, this kind of all came to a head when everybody, not just the pet rescue organizations, but then you had some city and county officials getting involved in the SPCA saying, nobody has any idea what we're up against because we're in this every day. So,
sure. I can completely sympathize with the idea that maybe they felt misunderstood. Maybe they felt like they were being piled on and ganged up on. But having been a journalist for most of my professional life and now in public service, I know that the way to form consensus, the way to build coalitions, the way to get people to understand what you're going through is through talk and through negotiation and through discourse and through dialogue. And so if people are piling on, that's a symptom of a greater problem, which is a bunker mentality. You've got people from the rescue groups, you've got concerned citizens, you've got politicians, you've got all these groups. Why are they so angry and why are they all speaking out at the same time? That's because they have no outlet. They can't go to an SPCA board meeting and take 2 minutes and share their feelings. They don't get their calls returned. So in the interest of diffusing this group of angry people, that's when you throw sunlight on things. That's when you open your doors Instead, what we saw was the opposite, where people retreating into a bunker mentality. We're under siege, and their officials wouldn't go on air to talk to the news, and they wouldn't engage the electeds who had questions, and their spokesperson even went underground, and so it became almost quite literally of this bunker mentality, and that's not good for the well-being of civil discourse. It's not good for taxpayers. It's not good for anybody. I mean, this could have been talked out.
No, it doesn't help if you all and one group isn't willing to kind of come to the table to talk. That's very important. Right now, we'd like to open it up to you, the public, you at home. Like to hear from you about what you think is going to take to build a better SPCA from the ground up. Give us a call at 800-224-8989 or 559-275-8989, or you can email us at talk@kbpr.org. One of the things that we do have to look at is when you look at the SPCA here in Fresno, they do have a huge task. I mean, I'm reading as that they get about 100,000 animals in 1 year, and they release about 6,000 for adoptions, which is really just a dent when you think about it.
Right. That is a dent. And through, just like you said, even talking more openly, I think that I don't want to bash them, because they say that, you know, now with their restructuring, they'll be able to focus more on their core mission. And I think that could be a great thing for the entire community. If the animal control component of what they did led them away from that, then I think them getting back to like their core mission to prevent, you know, cruelty to animals, to adopt out animals, hopefully low cost spay and neuter programs and real education in the community. If they can get back to that, I'm in complete agreement and couldn't be happier. But in retrospect, the job that was being done, I don't think it went far enough.
Well, wouldn't it be fair to say that most of the pets that are there, they're there because somebody really doesn't want them? And, you know, we spoke with Madeira Animal Control Services, which we will hear from in a little bit. And they said the rescue agencies basically come in and take the best animals, the ones that are adoptable, and leave those that may not be adoptable kind of at the shelter. But she also said that a lot of the animals that are there, when it comes to they're no kill, some of them just come in really bad condition.
Sure. And I know a lot of rescue groups have been accused of, let's say, cherry picking the best, the most beautiful animals, that sort of thing. I have seen nothing further from the truth. We have taken animals from the SPCA. Actually, one of the last dogs that we were able to pull from that organization came to us with 1 day of antibiotics, and I was told that he just had a stomach ache from those, and he had a lot of bite wounds from a dog fight, and he hadn't been properly vetted for those until I said that I was going to go pull him. When I did, I brought him back to my shelter, and the next morning he was practically dead. We took him to an emergency vet services at our cost. He ended up having parvo at a year and a half old, possibly infecting our whole center, and it took him 3 weeks to become, you know, even healthy enough to be adoptable. So that's definitely not true on our part, and that's what I see from other rescues as well. We take dogs. We obviously are a bully rescue, taking in pit bulls and pit mixes, that sort of thing, which are highly unadoptable under normal circumstances in a regular shelter just due to their breed and due to the stigma for that breed. So nothing could be further from the truth for us and anyone else. In fact, in pulling dogs from the SPCA, there were several times when they would not give up a dog that was, let's say, healthy, good-looking, because they, in turn, I believe, thought that was competition for an adoption fee. And that's not correctly working with rescues. That's not really advocating to get dogs out. And if someone wants to pick a beautiful dog to get it adopted out through their organization, that frees up a kennel for another dog there not to be euthanized. To not allow rescues to pull an animal because of the way it looks or that someone thinks they're cherry picking, you are indeed killing another, what you consider as an unadoptable animal, in its place, just to keep that one for yourself. And I think that kind of competition, it has to be out the window.
Okay, we have Richard from Fresno. Richard?
Yeah, was the SPCA invited to your discussion?
Yes, they were. We did put out a call.
What was their response?
Well, they did not get back to us, and we would love to have them on the program because I think it's important to hear all sides. But yes, we did reach out, and the offer is still there. We would still love to have them on.
Yeah, you know, I'd love to hear from them.
We would too. We
Thank
really
you.
Would, and we'll keep trying. Thank you, Richard. And I think that's sort of part of what it is that there is a lot of criticism, and we're not hearing a lot from the other side. And I think, you know, when you think about it, it is, if you are not in that job every day and doing what they're doing, it can be easy to sit back and criticize and say, well, why aren't you doing this and why aren't you doing that? When everybody can agree, they have a very difficult job.
Well, sure. And, you know, just coming from the background that I have, which is communications and journalism, and now that I've been in politics for a couple of years, this was not managed right from a public relations standpoint, from a mass media and communication standpoint. Absolutely, what they have is a very difficult job. So educate folks. So come out on the media, do tours, bring the news people in. Invite folks to the board meetings. But it was just, that's one thing I can speak to, is that I have never seen a public relations strategy like this one. So again, just what Becky said, you know what? They are still there. They're not going away. They're going to be a major partner in our community among animal lovers and animal rescue groups, and hopefully with the city in providing their core mission, which is the prevention of cruelty to animals. And they're going to be out there with spay and neuter. They're going to be out there educating people. They're going to be out there with adoptions. And we need them. And I have never criticized their operations. I have only stood for transparency and accountability when it comes to taxpayers. So I wish them all the success in the world. Maybe this is what they need to find a new mission, to find to be reborn, and maybe this is what the taxpayers need too, so that they can go off on their own. So I mean, maybe this is exactly what our community needed to move forward. So I'm hoping that it's a good outcome for everybody.
Yes, we have Jan from Oakhurst.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
And your questions or your concerns?
Well, my concerns is the lack of transparency, and in my situation, it was their lack of willingness to be available for education for people. I mean, one of the biggest concerns in animal rescue is education, educating the public, educating the families that take the animals, knowing how to take care of them, spay, neuter, and they were not receptive to that. They took the materials, but they never had them out again. I asked one of the board members, who was a board member at that time, I don't know if she is, because now when you call, they won't even tell you who their board is, which to me is unreal. I worked with the SPCA in Monterey Peninsula, and we had contact with the board at any time we wanted, and we had no problems. But anyhow, I asked if I could come to a board meeting and make a presentation, and they said, no, they don't have the public at the board meetings. I asked why. They said, because we just like quick meetings. We like to get them over in and out and over with. Now, I don't know if that's the reason, but that's what I was told. The other thing is the housing of the animals. I do exotics, which are considered the small furry animals. The way they were kept was unreal. They were not in proper housing. They were on wire cages where their feet could fall through, and I tried to tell them that this is not the way to keep them. Could I work with them? I met their education person, and the next time I went back, that person was gone as there was someone else there, and I gave them all the materials, but they were not available. I just feel that they're not visible. They're not willing to work with other people, and I can really feel the plight of the other rescue organizations in Fresno that are trying to work with them because they're not there to help.
Jan, thank you so much for your call. And I just want to reiterate again that we did try to contact a representative from the SPCA, and we would love to have them on because they are taking a lot of heat, and I really do feel they should have the opportunity to respond, and they should have the opportunity to talk about their position. So, I mean, the door's open, and we would love to have them. I think you had a question, Becky.
Oh, not a question. Just I wanted to say exactly what I believe it was Jan was saying, just about being more open and being more in the community for education purposes and being available to those that contact you. I think if they wanted to dispel any negative suspicions about their organization, they could have easily done that. But we've seen this kind of mentality and attitude from them in the past, even working with them to rescue dogs. I think the closed door kind of operation, and they've kind of had rescues as well as the public under their thumb as being the only game in town, so to speak. I know up in Tuolumne County, who we work with, they have a city animal control whose job it is to control population and that sort of thing. And they unfortunately do have to euthanize. But right next door is their Humane Society. Completely two different operations where there's a checks and balances. You have one looking to get dogs out and get them adopted and really looking out for humane conditions. And then you have the animal control component. So you have a checks and balances there of two organizations that can speak with each other, speak out in the community about what one another is doing. When you had the SPCA in town trying to do both jobs and under just one blanket, maybe that was the problem. Maybe that was, you know, just a problem in the model, and they've been doing it for 50 years, and maybe
Or it could have been, you know, you have the city and county, and everybody's short with money, and you had a contract with somebody who was willing to take on a very difficult job. And it could have been, okay, they're handling it. I don't want to bother at this point. And, I mean, maybe that was the situation for years, not necessarily now. Uh-huh. But it's just, okay, we've got somebody to handle this department. Mm-hmm. We've got a ton of other problems. Let's kind of move mm-hmm. on.
Well, you know, and this kind of goes back to the caller, too. Jan was talking about the unwillingness to include her presentation in their meeting. Well, why not? Well, so that we can get out of here quick. You know, being on the city council, you have to sit there for hours and hours and hours. And, you know, I've always said this, that for 30 people who get up to speak that may not have something positive to offer or may not be constructive or maybe misinformed, you know what? The 31st person gets up and they have a good idea. And maybe that's something we want to include in on whatever it is we're working on. And that's the beauty of the democratic process, is that members of the public, they get up. That's the First Amendment. You have the constitutional right to petition the government for the redress of grievances. And that's what this was for me, was, you know what? Maybe that 31st person will get up and offer something fantastic when it comes to when it comes to animal control in our community. And so, you know what? I would like to get in and get out of my council meetings as well. And it would be great if everyone agreed with me. But guess what? The meetings take a long time, and not everyone agrees with me. And that's the beauty of it. It's the democratic process.
Councilmember Olivier, what is going to be the process then to sort of build a new animal control service?
Well, we have we voted last week to create a task force. My colleague, Councilmember Oliver Baines from the 3rd District, will be with me on the task force. We really, things are moving so fast right now. We really don't know the form that it's going to take, but city staff has been instructed to reach out to the county board of supervisors. We'd like to add two supervisors to this task force. Then we'd like to maybe have a vet, maybe have some rescue groups, maybe someone from the SPCA to help with the transition. We don't know what form this is going to take, but we know that the clock is ticking.
And one of the things that's been mentioned, and when you talk about bringing all these people together to try to come up with a better plan, you know, I went online and I'm checking, and there are at least several dozen rescue groups in the Central Valley.
Yes.
And I'm thinking you wouldn't have so many if some of them even worked together. Doesn't everybody – isn't that part of it too? Everybody kind of has their own little thing over here as far as what they're doing and think they can do a better job of it than somebody else. And that's why it's kind of set up. So how do you bring all those different factions together?
Sure. I mean, it sounds like something that would be difficult to do. But I'll tell you what, prior to this, I mean, all of us definitely work together. We are breed specific, and like Lab Rescue is breed specific. But then you have other organizations like Animal Compassion Team that does cats, every breed of dog, just basically anything that's needed. And they have a huge foster base, and that's what they are. They don't have their own shelter, and they are basically foster base. So what they bring to the table is obviously something different than what we do, having a facility and being breed specific. But what I've seen is an absolute lack of bickering, backbiting. It has been just a really smooth coalition. And maybe that's because, let's say, you have, so to speak, a common enemy. But I'll tell you what, we all worked together before. I know pretty much every person from all the rescues here in the Central Valley, and we have been able to work together. And I think for a common goal like this one that's finally out in the public and finally something that could absolutely come to fruition and be better for the animals in the Central Valley, I know personally that every single one of them is dedicated to that cause. So I think everyone can come together. And like everyone says, you know, are there too many chiefs and not enough Indians? Well, I think under this circumstance, everyone will be willing to be an Indian to some point just to get something better and get it done.
You think it's going to be a more difficult process than the people imagine, Clint?
I think it's going to be an easier process than people imagine.
Okay.
So, I don't mean to diminish the hard work that the SPCA has done, but I mean viewing this from an operational side as a member of the city council. I mean it's my job to make sure that the health and safety of the taxpayer is protected, meaning we have to have a fire department, we have to have a police department, we have to have animal control to pick up stray/dangerous/deceased animals. So we can contract for that. You know, what's going to be interesting is to see what form that takes when it comes to the ultimate welfare of animals. I don't want to inject my personal feelings into it because I'm not sure if the kill rate can be lowered, because that's not something that I've studied or I mean, I've come at this from a transparency issue. I know that's the goal of the animal rescue groups. I know that's the goal of the SPCA. I know that's my goal. I would like to see the kill rate lowered. I'd like to see more pets adopted. So that's going to – we'll have to see where that goes and what form that takes. But as far as the city is concerned, they need to find a dog catcher. And we need to provide that service. And I don't think that's going to be difficult. Again, the tough part is going to be, okay, now what? How does that shelter operate?
And one last thing, too. We look at this whole component, and I know it's something the SPCA talked about all the time, and that was the public component. You know, if you have people out there who don't spay and neuter their pets, who let them roam all over the place and who don't take responsibility for them, you know, that's another group of people that you've really got to try to work with. And that's part of the reason Fresno and Fresno County had such a huge problem.
Right. We have a huge overpopulation problem with backyard breeding, people not spaying and neutering. But I can tell you from a Fresno Bully Rescue, you know, aspect, we go out in the community as much as possible. We give little education seminars to schools, different. The last one was a faith-based sports program down in southeast Fresno. And those are, you know, the people that you really need to reach. And when you do talk talk to them and you do education, you have to provide alternatives for them. A lot of those people, it's not that they wouldn't spay and neuter, but they're under the impression that it is expensive. And it is quite expensive even through the SPCA, which I hope is something that they'll be able to change in the future. But there are places in town. Hope Animal Foundation provides low-cost spay and neuter and even gets grants and spays and neuter for free. But people need to know about those things. If you don't go out in the community and you don't educate and you just expect them to come to you, that's not going to happen. Personal responsibility arguments aside, you need to be the one to be proactive and get out there.
Okay. We have one call from Lee, and we're going to have to wrap it up. Lee?
Hi, I wanted to dispel the myth here that the SPCA hasn't been open with the news media. For openers, they were on Valley Edition, I think, less than a month ago.
Yes, they were.
A few years ago, Mark Benjamin, a reporter for the Fresno Bee, did a major front page story where he followed animals through the SPCA process. Additionally, a few years ago, there was a guy who called himself a consumer reporter on Channel 30 who came in and brutalized the SPCA about their response time, and it was just a totally unfair story. The difference with the city council meeting that goes on and the council members are criticized by the public is council members are elected and paid to be there. The SPCA's board is a volunteer board, and based on the way they've been treated by the news media in the past, I don't blame them for not wanting them in their board meetings. And this all seems to be stemming from a tiff between the rescue groups and the SPCA that's gotten everybody ramped up. And we don't want to admit that the problem is the people turning in animals at that front counter. They're open 365 days a year, 24 hours a day. There's no way these rescue groups can take on that task, and it's just ridiculous that they think they can. If they can't negotiate an effective contract with the SPCA, how are they going to work together in a coalition? How are they even going to staff this facility? This rescue group houses 40 animals. That's just a fraction of what's at the SPCA all the time. We've given them a horrible task of euthanizing these unwanted animals, and it's just ridiculous to think that we can go to a no-kill just off the bat. The reason these other facilities are able to be no-kill is because there is a kill shelter. And I notice they say they are no-kill. They don't say no euthanasia. We just love the stories of one animal that's been saved, that's had thousands of dollars spent on its leg, but we don't want to fess up to what's really going on with the general public. And even that low-cost spay and neuter has been offered in Fresno, it's just not a big enough program. Not enough people are taking advantage of it. A lot of people just dump their animals on the SPCA when they move out of town and don't make an effort to find new homes for them. Okay. SPCA is not their idea to euthanize. We have put them in this position, and now we're attacking them for euthanizing these animals that the general public hasn't taken care of.
Okay. Thank you so much for calling in, Lee. We truly appreciate your comments. And I think that's going to have to do it for us. I know we had another call. I'm sorry we could not get to you, but this is one of those kind of topics that isn't going to go away. We'd love to have you back as the process continues and starts to build.
Thank you.
And thank you both.
We'll be back.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Fresno City Councilmember Clint Olivier and Becky Holly with the Fresno Bully Rescue. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Cahuilla Delta Medical Center and Kaiser Permanente.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition.
Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. The County of Madera has an animal shelter program that might be working. And it is not a nonprofit agency, but it is one of the county's departments. Its budget is set by the Board of Supervisors, which is a structure Fresno City and County may consider. What are the pluses and challenges of trying to provide services to animals in Madera County? With us today is Kirsten Gross, Animal Service Director for Madera County. Kirsten, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
First of all, when talking about the way the animal shelter operates in Madera, what is the structure of the Animal Service Department here in Fresno County? The SPCA contracted with the city and the county to provide the service. In Madera, how does that operate?
Well, we are a standalone agency funded wholly by taxpayer dollars, and we're overseen directly by the Board of Supervisors of Madera County.
And who sets your budget?
That would be the Board of Supervisors with Madera County.
Okay. Now, have you always had that sort of structure?
We have. It's been that way. I've been here 12 years, and it's been that way prior to my coming here for many years prior to that. So, yes.
So what are all the services do you provide for Madera County?
Well, we offer, of course, sheltering for animals that are unwanted or without a home, injured animals, those kind of things. We offer also the law enforcement arm of Madera County for animals. So we have officers out in the field for licensing and rabies vaccine compliance for, you know, proper sheltering and tethering for all those kind of things. We also do, of course, removal of deceased animals. We remove dangerous or stray animals, and we educate, and we, of course, also adopt animals out and work with rescues to get animals to a new home.
And you talked a little bit about your funding source through taxpayer dollars. So in a tight budget year, you might experience some cuts. And are you still going through furlough days right now?
You know, we are still going through furlough days at least two Fridays a month. We have suffered, of course, like everybody else in this tight budget year. We have been reduced from a 17-member staff to a 10-member staff. So that's almost half of our staffing, which has been very, very difficult for us. So our response time is not as fast as it used to be, of course. But because we're seeing some declines in the amount of animals coming in and a very, you know, helpful and responsive community, it's still been tolerable, so we're doing okay.
So what is your budget?
Our budget this year is about $700,000.
You're not a no-kill shelter, so you really depend on pet adoptions to kind of keep the population down?
We do depend on pet adoptions. We do about 1,500 to 2,000 adoptions a year. We also have another 1,000 or more animals that are out to rescue organizations from Marin County, for instance, or Walnut Creek area, San Francisco, all over the place. They come to our shelter and pick some of our great animals and find them new spots.
How many animals do you see a year?
Well, a typical population is about 8,000 and dropping. Back in 2008 and 9, we had almost 9,000 animals. Back in fiscal year 2009 and 10, we had 8,666. Last year, we saw 7,753, and this year we're hoping for even less than that. So hopefully, if the trend continues, as we hope it will, that we'll see our population continue to decrease, our adoptions and rescues increase, therefore minimizing, you know, anything we have to do in terms of euthanasia of unwanted animals.
You talked about the economy and how it impacts you. And here in our situation, we were told that there were more animals coming in because of the economy. You know, when people lose their home, they don't have any place to go, so they have to give up their pets. Now, have you seen that? And it's just the fact that you've had more adoptions to offset that?
We've seen animals coming in, of course, under those very difficult circumstances. But I can't really see any difference in the trend from where it was even 3 and 4 years ago. I don't think the amount has really changed dramatically. But because we've been so progressive in our spay and neuter program, Our friends group, our volunteer group is so beneficial and helpful on getting the message out to the population that really needs the help. I think we're seeing a decrease in the population overall of unwanted pets in Madera, and that's why, you know, that even if people have to turn in animals with unfortunate circumstances in their own lives, it hasn't been a tremendous impact on us because we've been able to keep the numbers down.
You talked about the help and the cooperation you have, not only with outside groups, but with the public when it comes to spaying and neutering. Is that key to keeping the pet population down?
It really is key, and there's no one single answer or one single group that can create success. It has to be a community effort. And so I think to notify, you know, and identify key players in that, of course you have to have really good shelter staff that communicates well with the public, that understands the hardships that many people are going through right now and understands animals and helps do the best things for the community. Then you also have to have that active volunteer group that, you know, progressively talks to people, identifies the target that needs help, and offers solutions and actually helps to gather donations so you can do the kind of things you need to do through a really great and terrific spay and neuter program like we have.
Okay. And so you have a very good spay and neuter program.
Absolutely. And our Board of Supervisors, who is also one of the key players, of course, in our community, they have given us 100% support on our spay and neuter program. Through our adoptions, we charge a minimal amount for adoptions. It covers the spay and neuter and a few things, but there is a lot of times a little extra, if you will, from each adoption fee, especially if the animal comes in already altered and we can, you know, eliminate having to spay or neuter the animal, then there's a little bit of savings there. That savings throughout the many adoptions that we've had throughout each year, it ends up being a lump sum in our budget at the end of the year that is totally set aside for spay and neuter fees. Well, with this extra money that we've been able to acquire from our adoptions, the Board of Supervisors has submitted that to our Friends of Madera Animal Shelter for the spay and neuter program. They've invested $100,000 last year and this year to make sure that we have the coverage to help the people that need help to get their animals spayed and neutered. It's amazing.
Do you think that's also responsible? Have you seen a drop then in your kill rate because you can get more pets adopted and the fact that you have less pets?
Absolutely, absolutely. The bottom line is if you have less coming in, more adoptions and rescues going out, it leaves you less animals that you have to euthanize. And that's our goal, is at some point we're never going to become what they refer to as a no-kill shelter, because a no-kill shelter doesn't take in all the horribly maimed, injured, you know, vicious animals. They just take in, you know, specific animals that they can readopt. But as an open shelter like we are and like the SPCA has had with the Fresno County and City, they're an open shelter where they have to take in everything. And honestly, not everything is adoptable. Some of them have issues or problems that make them non-adoptable. So what we'd like to become is what we refer to as a low-kill shelter, whereas we are only euthanizing animals because of serious illnesses, injuries, or behavioral issues.
How important is building the relationships not only with other local community groups, but with rescue organizations to help you maintain the population or to keep that population manageable?
You know, it's really imperative that everybody works together for a common goal. And that common goal, of course, is to save the animals and provide a terrific service for the community. So I think as we keep those in focus, that we have a common goal together, you're going to have certainly problems between people on occasion or between organizations on occasion. But I think if we focus on the common goal and we can work together, I think that's what's going to make it happen, and that's what's making it happen in Madera.
And also in Madera, I don't know if it would even be fair to compare Madera to Fresno County just because of the increase in numbers.
Oh, yeah, the management of the numbers that the Fresno SPCA has had to take on is incredible to me. They They took in 99,000 animals over the past 2 years, and I took in, you know, less than 8,000 a year. I mean, the numbers are so, you know, inflated compared to what Madeira is.
So are you hopeful where you are? I mean, I know right now everybody's experiencing budget problems, but you think you have that cooperation amongst not only the government and the Board of Supervisors with the public to try to improve on what you have?
I absolutely do, and I think this community, being a small community, I think that there's great benefits to being a small community because we're closer knit. We know a lot of people on a first-name basis. You know, we talk when we see them in the grocery store, all those kind of things that maybe you lose a little bit of that with a larger community. But I think overall, if with the community support that we have, with, you know, with the interaction we have with the Board of Supervisors and administrative offices, that we can accomplish a lot here. Even on a minimized budget, we can still do a lot. We can still encourage people to only adopt from shelters, and not to encourage people to adopt from breeders or pet stores where you don't know where the background is from or that kind of thing. But get them from the shelter, save a life, and eventually, you know, our hope is that they will all have a home at some point.
Thank you so much, Kirsten Gross, Animal Services Director with Madeira County.
Thank you.
And I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you are listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. It is a term we are familiar with, the brain drain, the best and the brightest leaving the area. According to the Census Bureau, one in every six single college graduates will leave Fresno. Now, there is a group that wants to change that trend. Joining me to talk more about this is Joe Denham with Creative Fresno. Joe, this is not a new phenomena. It's been happening for a while. Now, your initiative is called the Boomerang Project. So what is it and what is its goal?
The purpose of the Boomerang Project is to reverse brain drain in Fresno by recruiting highly skilled potential boomerangs to return to fill high-level positions in the Valley.
How do you plan to do that? What do you think it's going to take to do that?
Well, these people are hard to find. They've set down roots somewhere else. So we're really reaching out through trade groups, community groups, school groups to find their family members who might know of their situation where they're at the juncture in their life where they can make the decision to come back and start a family where there's more affordable housing and great career opportunities.
Well, what do you think is the difference between the people who stay and those who go? I mean, it's basically a rite of passage. A lot of young people, you know, they want to experience something new, and they go away from college. They go away to college, and then a lot of them end up liking where they are, and they stay. It's sort of like what we have here with the residency program at a community hospital. We bring doctors here to do their residency. Hope they like it, and we'll stay. So, how do you kind of switch that around?
Well, we're reaching out specifically to people that have roots here. When companies are recruiting, they oftentimes specify that they'll only speak to someone from out of the area if they have some relation here, so they don't have someone that's bouncing from job to job finding promotions. So we're reaching out to boomerangs, people that are from here and left, to bring them back to an opportunity.
And what will you have to offer? Now, a lot of those folks are where they are because of job opportunities. I mean, how do you convince them that, you know, you can have the same kind of job or work at the same kind of level that you are in a different city?
Well, we have a group of jobs that's demonstrative of what we have available, from manufacturing positions to accounting positions to doctors to lawyers to public sector positions that demonstrate the level of jobs. But more importantly, if we find the right person, we'll help them find the right opportunity so they can come home.
So what you're saying, if you reach out to a boomerang and they're living someplace else, you will try to work with them and say, look, if you come, this is the job we have for you. We're not just saying, hey, pick up, come back here, and we hope you find a job. We're going to have something for you.
We have a great deal of jobs already available from companies that are committed to helping the Valley, companies and organizations that are committed to helping the Valley. But more importantly, if we don't have the perfect fit right now, we'll find it for the person.
What do you think that's going to take to try to get more people to stay here? I think part of the problem is people do have this perception that there are no high-paying jobs here, and that is simply not the case.
All we can do is offer and show them. There's a position that my firm has open for a maintenance manager at $90,000. That's not a bad salary, especially in the Valley where things are much more affordable.
And so a lot of people may not think that. They may not even think about looking at a position like that because they're not aware of what all it entails.
Well, we'd probably, that's a pretty specific position, be looking for someone in that field. But that's a competitive salary for other areas, even more so when you factor in the cost of living in the Valley.
And that's always been one of the draws. As we say, the cost of living here is better than in other places.
Yeah, when my wife and I moved back from Los Gatos, we were astounded at housing prices, restaurant prices, everything is easier to have in Fresno.
But I really think it comes down to the job, because I can tell you when I moved to the Valley a long time ago, but, you know, I was had barely hit at 30, that age. And I didn't think I was going to stay, but I stayed because I absolutely, this is where I wanted to be. And I think it's really getting people to come here, because my perception of what the Valley was like was totally different. And I think it could have been at the stage of my life. But then I grew up in the Valley as well. So it was really like coming home, and I liked it. I didn't really want to go to L.A. or San Francisco because I'd already been. But it's part of it is getting people just to try it out.
That's one thing that we talk about a lot. It is a big perception problem. We have virtually everything to offer in Fresno you can find in the Bay Area. We have operas. We have theaters. We have outdoor recreation. If someone's looking for something, and I am able to speak with the Boomerang, and they say, I'm looking for this, it's a very high likelihood that I'll be able to put them in contact with what that is.
Are you kind of concerned that we're just going to kind of make the problem worse, that we already have this brain drain because of what's going on with California's education system, and that when you have our state colleges and universities raising tuition and limiting enrollment is forcing more students to go to college out of state, and it's even going to be harder to recapture those young people. You concerned? Is that a concern?
That's a great concern. That's one of the reasons for the project. And we think that the kind of people that we're reaching out to will make the Valley a better place. They'll make the business or the nonprofit or the school that they work for more successful and more able to hire people. So these will be job creators, hopefully.
What do you think – what do we need to be doing now then? Your organization or this project, the Boomerang project, you have some very specific things that you're going to do for outreach. But are there other things we can be doing as well?
Well, me being on this radio may help someone become aware of the project who has a child or a niece or a nephew out of state. They're professional. They're doing well, but they really want to start a family, but they're tired of the rat race. When I was in the Bay Area, I worked 12 to 16 hours a day. And in Fresno, I'm able to go to the gym before work and still have a life after work.
Yeah, there are a few advantages. And another question I'd like to bring up, are we doing all we can to keep the professionals we have here now? You know, a lot of them went through tough times during our economic downturn. We're coming back. We probably lost some people during that time who had to move because it was the only way they're going to find a job. How do we start working with some of the professionals that are already here and to make sure they are aware of the opportunities?
Well, in addition to the Boomerang project, my regular position is with Denham Resources, and we're always trying to find the people that are here first to fill positions that we have open in the Valley.
Okay. is your project off the ground, and what are the other agencies that are you tapping into to try to get you to help with this?
I don't have a full list of our sponsors here, but we're working with Burt's Rosa Design, the Lyell Center, the RJI, Meza Films Associate, and Creative Fresno, along with virtually any trade organization or community group we can get in front of to get the word out.
Okay. What do you think it's going to take this time? Because as I mentioned, you know, we've talked about this a lot, the brain drain, and we've tried various things. Is it going to be more of a consistent, ongoing effort to really try to do this outreach?
It certainly will be. And I think the main point of this project is to show people that they can come home and to provide more and more examples of success in coming back to Fresno. On the website, it's fresnopolis.org, we have a list of people that were boomerangs and came back to Fresno, and they talk about why they are happy that they made that decision.
What do you think? Why is this so vital? What happens if we don't start recapturing, you know, some of those people?
Well, it's a drain on Fresno. It's people that the area has invested in raising and educating and building skills and building relationships, and we're losing them. And they're some of our best and brightest people. And we'll go on without them, but we'll be a better place with them.
What about the local colleges and universities, the outreaching there as well? Maybe starting when, you know, when they first come in, you know, start talking to them about, you know, what kind of opportunities you can have here.
That's a really good idea. And there's a lot of initiatives that do that. A lot of firms recruit straight from the colleges, but we're really trying to capture some of the people that have gained skills that they might not have gained
here. And have left and what truly make the Valley a better place if they would come back.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I applaud you for your idea. I think it's a great idea. And I'm one who came back, and I'm glad I did. I really like it here. And thank you, Jeff Denham, and much success with your project.
Thank you, Juanita.
Well, that's all the time we have for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kvpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can email us at talk@kvpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer and production and operations manager Don Weaver, executive producer Joel Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation.